Please be seated. So I grew up in the South, and then I lived in the Midwest. And when you drive around the South and the Midwest, and perhaps any place other than California, you see those church signs with little messages. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I've not seen any out here. No. But you know what I'm talking about. So they say things like, count your blessings, not your problems, or faith is a journey, not a destination. They might even say, hate is not a family value. I always felt really kind of bad for pastors who had to go out and put those things on, and I wondered who in the world in the church takes the time to go and do that. God bless them. Now imagine driving down the road and seeing one that said, Jesus' family values, hate father and mother. Wife and children, brother and son. It would certainly cause you to pause, if not just swerve right off the road with your jaw dragging the floorboard. These words of Jesus run so counter to his usual message, teaching us to love, even to love our enemies. Now we're being told to hate. And not only hate, but hate those people with whom we have the deepest ties, the greatest need, perhaps the greatest affection. What are we to do with these shocking words? Well, we can try to explain them away. Believe me, I have tried. But the fact is that even in Greek, the word best translates into hate. I've tried to figure out a way to soften the blow, but it simply isn't possible. We have to deal with the stick of dynamite Jesus has just handed us. So, shall we? If we look closely at our gospel text, we notice five movements. Three are about the cost of discipleship. Three are about the cost of discipleship, the loss of family, carrying the cross, and giving up our possessions. Two are about discernment and decision-making. For instance, carefully considering before we build something or wage war. Looking at the text in its entirety, we see a different portrait of Jesus than the family hating Jesus we might see at first glance or upon first read. I'm reminded of the drill sergeant in G.I. Jane or Top Gun, and I know I just aged myself by mentioning those movies, but I think those were probably the last of such movies I watched. So if there's a more current G.I. Jane or Top Gun kind of movie, you can tell me about it on the patio afterwards and I'll watch it. Anyway, remember the drill sergeant, this caricature, who makes his enlistees do endless push-ups in the rain, finally flattening their faces into the mud right as they finish their final set, only to tell them to start all over again. By the end of the movie, of course, we learn that the drill sergeant isn't just mean and nasty, but he's been trying to make sure that the enlistees are really ready for the life ahead of them. Perhaps in our gospel today, we see a portrait of Jesus, the drill sergeant, who reasons, I'm going to really stick it to you this time so that you will know what you're getting into before you make your final commitment to this life of faith. Now, it's a little bit too late for us. We've made that commitment to the life of faith when we renounced that evil which rebels against God and destroys and corrupts the creatures of God and turned toward that hope and faith and grace of Christ and promised to grow into the full stature of Christ. We've already made the commitment. Nonetheless, it's still an act of compassion, I think, that Jesus says this to us. And we have to remember he is saying this as he makes his way toward Jerusalem, toward the cross. Jesus wants to know that his followers can withstand the cost of discipleship. Jesus wants to know that we can withstand the cost of discipleship. Because, as we know, discipleship is costly. The life of faith requires choice, like that first willful choosing we made in baptism or made again for ourselves at confirmation, choosing a certain kind of living. Just as God did in the book of Deuteronomy with the Israelites who wandered in the desert, God sets a choice before us. Choose life, life with God, or choose death in one of many forms. Does Jesus really want us to turn our backs on our family? Does he really want us to give up all of our possessions? Are we really to hate even our own life? Yes, if these things constrict our growth in God's life-giving love. Yes, if these things become oppressive forces dealing death rather than life. Yes, if we think that any of these things are more important than opening ourselves to fellowship with Christ and ongoing growth in love and service to God. We are to abandon whatever it is that keeps us from opening to and trusting the journey of faith through which Christ leads us. And that abandon begins first with that internal work of putting it all in the right place, in the right order in our lives and in ourselves. The very thing we love most may be the very thing we must let go of. We may have to travel the world far from family and friends to carry out the work to which God calls us. We may have to withstand mocking from peers because we have chosen to save our money to go on a mission trip and serve those in need in the name and love of Christ rather than spend it on the next new fad. We may have to spend a long night or more in jail to protest an unjust social policy. We may have to risk the hostile stare of others, as God uses our faith and our lives to reshape the world around us. We may be abandoned by family and friends who cannot understand our need to follow the deeper call of God on our lives, the deeper call of our faith. We may even have to lose what we value most about ourselves as the life of faith transforms us. And because the cost is so potentially great, it's important for us to prepare. You know, I think Jesus was actually acting with great compassion when he blasted us with today's teaching. He's helping us to get clear about what we need to do to continue in this life of faith, this call to discipleship. How do we prepare ourselves to love the Lord, to walk in God's ways? How do we prepare ourselves to choose life? We come here. We are shaped by word and sacrament. We are bathed in holy mystery. We serve each other in love and peace, and we humble ourselves to receive love and service from one another. That can be even harder sometimes. We kindle our minds and imaginations in the community of faithful learning through Bible study, classes, EFM, Sunday school. We minister to the needy in places and ways that might just make us uncomfortable. We prepare ourselves day after day through our daily prayer practices, week after week through our participation here and our service in the world, month after month, year after year, for a lifetime, so that we can walk with faith and trust and hope down that life-giving path that God sets before us. It isn't a sexy life. It is not a life of self-indulgence. It is a deeply countercultural life. All you got to do is watch 30 minutes of TV to figure that out. It is intentional, this life of faith. It is patient. It is self-sacrificial, painful at times. It is practiced until we are so dragged.